All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Pehe Amud Bet, three lines from the bottom. The Gemara is continuing to discuss whether it's possible for the Kelim of the Lokeach to successfully make a Kinyan on his behalf in the property of the Mocher. The basic question revolves around whether the Karka or the Reshut of the Mocher dominates, and therefore the Kelim are Batel to the Reshut of the Mocher, and the Kelim of the Lokeach make no difference there. Or are they significant enough that they could be distinct, and therefore the kelim of the lokeach, property of the lokeach, or the utensils of the lokeach, will successfully acquire on his behalf in possession of the mocher. So Gemara here tries to bring a proof. Tashma, a case, mashach chamarav upo'alav. He did a kinyan seemingly meshicha on chamarav upo'alav, v'chnisan l'toch beito, and then he brought him into his house. So over here, the question about the girsa, you can see here that the Rashbam thinks that the girsa is chamarav upo'alav. The girsa following his grandfather, the Rashi, is that it is chamarav en pa'alav, even though if you look on the Tosafot, he wants to change the girsa bin nun, that it's chamarin upo'alin. Chamarav and pa'alav seem to indicate it's his chamor and his po'alim. That would refer to the lokeach, the buyers over here. And the problem with that, as the Balei Tosafot point out, is if they already were chamarav upo'alav, the lokeach lo yitachein dimkein below pirkan nami. Why do you even need to unload them? He should be able to acquire the objects that are on the back of these animals by simply taking them into his house, doing a kinyan meshicha, because he is moving his own animals into the house and the items or the objects are being transported on the back of his animals. And that should have given him the acquisition that he needs, the kinyan that he needs. So Tosafot says that there is no way that it's talking about po'alav in chamarav. And therefore, he says the girsa is chamarin upo'alin. The other thing Tosafot points out is that the Gemara in Bava Metzia has a question. If you do a kinyan meshicha on an animal, not to acquire the animal, but to acquire the items on the animal, the kelim on the animal, does it work or not? The Gemara has the question in Bava Metzia. It says from our Gemara over here, it would have an answer. Over here it says that Mashach Chamarinu Po'alin. He's taking possession, doing a kinyan meshicha on these items in order to acquire whatever they are transporting on their back, and he's unsuccessful. So why can't we answer that question in Bava Metzia based on our Gemara here? And he says, because one of two reasons, either V'esh Lomar, D'hocha Kish Mashach HaChamarim, Aval HaChamorim Lo Mashach. Over here he pulled the donkey drivers, but he didn't pull the donkeys themselves. Which is that he's in pulling in or doing a kinyan meshicha on the donkey drivers, and the donkey drivers are pulling the chamorim into his house. Or he says, inami, the difference being how the mocher, how the seller spoke to him. In the case in Bava Metzia, it's a case where he says that the meshicha tabeima, meshicha of the animal will acquire that which is on its back. And then we have a question, is that successful or not? Over here, it just says, lech knei. Go take possession of it, but he doesn't specify through a kinyan meshicha on the animals, and therefore here you can't answer the question because it's a different case, because the language he used in the acquisition was different. So Tosafot differentiates it from the case in Bava Metzia. He does two things to set up the case here. First of all, he says it's chamarin and po'alin, that it's these third-party animals, or the animals of the mocher. Number two is he says that the meshicha is the meshicha of the chamarin and not the chamorin. Or he says that the language used by the mocher is lechu knei versus the language that's used in Bava Metzia, which is lechu knei ayidei meshicha. So in that way, Tosafot delineates the case that we're speaking about here. It's clear that the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu Gershom kept the girsa of chamarav upo'alav, and the Rashbam deals with it in the following manner. He says that a case here is where he was Mosheich, the individuals who are working with these animals, or the Po'alim himself. And he says, "Umeshichat Adam ta'un peirot." You do a kinyan meshicha on someone carrying peirot on his back. Lo mahani liknota te peirot, achim shocha peirot atzman. That doesn't help you to acquire the peirot until you do a kinyan meshicha on the peirot themselves. So the Rashbam limits the case to a case where you're making a kinyan meshicha on a person, and that would be different than a behemah. That's how it differentiates from the case in Bava Metzia. It's also why it fails over here. The other end, the Rabbeinu Gershom says, Mashach Hamarav Upo'alav, Shenatan Lehem Tvua B'scharan. He had paid them with merchandise. He had paid them with some sort of grain. And now he wants to buy it back from them. So you can't buy it back from them by doing a kinyan mashiach on them because it's already in their possession. Chamarinu poalim da alma mochrei peirot. And then he says, or the other possibility is that these are third-party animals and third-party workers. Or the last possibility you have here is when it says mashach chamarav upoalav, it is in the possessive form but referencing to the mochers, chamarim and poalim. That the mocher sent over the merchandise on his own poalim, his own workers, or he sent it on his own donkeys, and he's trying to do a kinyan mashicha on it. V'chnisan l'toch beito. Here is the lekeach, the buyer takes it into his house. Ben pasak ad shlo madad, or ben madad ad shlo pasak. Whether they've come to the conclusion on price, but have yet to measure out what is there, or whether they have measured out what is there, but they have yet to come to conclusion on price, shnehem yuchlim chazor bahen. Both of them have a right of retraction. The sale is not final. There is no kinyan over here to finalize the sale. The way the Balei Tosafot read it, you can see this in the last Balei Tosafot on the Amud, is afilu madad upasak nami. Balei Tosafot would say, even if he did both, even if they had measured it out and set the price, it would fail over here. Shneim yachol lachzor b'hem kein dayan lo pirkan. He never took them off the animals, and therefore there is no kinyan over here. And the only reason it uses this language is because that makes a difference in the latter half of the braita that we're quoting over here. But otherwise, we would not worry about whether either of these were done. The Rashbam disagrees, and the Rashbam says that had you had both of these in place, had it been medida and psikat of the price, then it would work. You would have be successful at acquiring these items. And he says, afilu mishicha kodem pisuk lo mahanya. Even if you say there is a kinyan mashiach over here, it's unsuccessful before you set the price. The lo samcha date, lo democher, lo delokeach. Buyers and sellers never reach a conclusion about the sale unless they know the price. If you don't know the price, there's always room for difference of opinion. That means even if you've taken it into your possession, even if you've done all the things that would have technically given you a kinyan over here, the lack of clarity on price blocks your ability to have the transaction be finalized. And then the other way around, he has the psika without the medida, then he has no kinyan over here. That's the problem, because the mashicha didn't help. That all happened either beforehand, or it happened in a manner that's not a kinyan mashicha, which is he pulled the chamarim, the one donkey drivers, or he pulled the poalim, which not doesn't necessarily give you a kinyan. So there you have a failure of kinyan. So one of those two fails, but it's clear from the Rashbam, if you had both in place, both the psika and medida, you would be successful at acquiring the item. And Matnitin, our Mishnah that says Mashach v'lo madad kana k'shepasak kodem mishicha. Our Mishnah that says that a mishicha without a medida works is only when the price is set in finality. So that's what he says, that here, the reason it all fails is because you lack the price clarity that you had in the Mishnah. But had you had price clarity in this case, then you could have concluded the situation. The Balei Tosafot believed that even if you had price clarity over here, it would fail because he hasn't taken them off the loaded animals or off the workers that are carrying them, and therefore there's no kinyan. There's a failure in the kinyan altogether. The Rashbam is saying there is possibly a kinyan over here, but it fails because you lack the psikat hamechir. You have the lack of clarity about the price itself. Now, pirkan, v'knisan le'toch beito. The other hand, if he unloads them and takes it into his house, so now here's the change. Until now, he brought them into his house on the back of the donkeys, or he brought them into the house on the back of the workers. And that's why there was a failure in the kinyan, because of the way that they were brought into the house. At this point, if he unloads the donkeys or unloads the workers and then brings the items into his house, pasak ad shelo madad, if they've set the price, even without a medida, ein shneim yachol gzor ben. Neither of them can rescind the sale. Madad ad shelo pasak, if he does the measurement of what's there before they come to a price conclusion, shneim yachol ahim lachzor ben. Both of them have a right of rescinding the transaction. So now what you see here is that price is the most important thing. The Rashbam repeats this a number of times, that out conclusion on price, you can never have a finalization of the deal. Lo samcha datayu. Parties never are at the point where they have gemira tadat unless they know what the price is. That's both from the seller's perspective as well as the buyer's perspective. No one will conclude a sale without knowing the price, because that's the one thing that could leave a difference between the parties. Even if both are willing, one wants to sell, one wants to buy, they can't come to agreement on price, then it doesn't go through the transaction. So without conclusion on price, there's no way you can make a kinyan. On the other hand, if you have psika, if you do have a conclusion on price, even though there's no measurement of what is there, if you have a kinyan here, where you did a kinyan by unloading the animals, unloading the items into your house, so now you have a way to make a kinyan on the items, because they are now in his possession. They're sitting in his house. His house can acquire on his behalf because they are sitting in his house. In that case, it will work, even though you don't have medida. And that is because once you've concluded on price, and you have a kinyan, once you take them off the animals and put them into your possession, and you have a kinyan chatzer, you are successful at locking the transaction, because then a medida, the measurement, is only giloi milta. It's simply a way to figure out how much is going to go through in this transaction. We've agreed on price. You're going to pay this much per whatever it is. Whatever measurement you want to use, you're going to pay a fixed price per that measurement. We just don't know how many of those measurements are there. But you're going to buy all that's there. So the only thing left to do is to figure out what the measurement is, to figure out how much you're going to pay, meaning the multiplier. What's the multiplier times the price, given the measurement that's there? But that's a giloy milta. That's not something that will be ma'akev the transaction. Nobody over here specified a specific quantity for the sale, neither the mocher nor the lokeach. They just said everything that's there, they're going to buy, and here's the price, and I have a kinyan because it's in my possession. There you will be successful if you have psika. As long as you have a price that's determined, you'll be successful. Medida, without psika, you will not be successful, because over there, you're lacking the price clarity. And we said before, anything without price clarity will not be concluded. All right, so now the Gemara says, here is the concluding line about this. Are the lokeach's kelim successful at acquiring in the mocher's property? The answer is, umi de kelav de mocher bishut lokeach lo kana. When the kelim of the mocher are in the reshut of lokeach lo kana, meaning that the mocher is unsuccessful at preventing the kinyan from going through, the mocher's kinyan is irrelevant. So too, kelav de lokeach, nami bishut lokecher lo kana. Similarly, the kelim of the lokeach are irrelevant in the possession or in the property of the mocher. In our case, the items are inside the sacks, are inside the kelim of the mocher. And here the lokeach unloaded that into his property. Took it off the donkeys or the workers, but they're still in the sacks that belong to the mocher. And we say that the lokeach is successful at acquiring it. That means that the lokeach's property overrides the sacks of the mocher, overrides the kelim of the mocher, or in essence, the kelim of the mocher are batel to the property of the lokeach. So the fact that you are successful at acquiring in that case shows you that the mocher's kelim become irrelevant in the face of the lokeach's property. What the Gemara says is the same is true in reverse, which is that if the kelim are batel to the karka or batel to the property, so too the kelim of the lokeach are also batel to the property of the mocher, and that means that the kelim of the lokeach will be unsuccessful at acquiring while they are in the property of the mocher, because they are batel to the property of the mocher, and therefore you would be unsuccessful at acquiring in that instance. Just note that the Rashbam before says that there are some people who explain the end of the Braita as being a case where they have to set the price before he unloads the donkeys. Because if he sets the price before he unloads the donkeys, then the unloading itself is the kinyan mishicha.
And you can see this explanation in the Rabbeinu Gershom here.
And the Rashbam says, ta'ut hu biyadam. That is absolutely incorrect. Because, dilma ha'kana lokeach, la mishum kniyat reshuto. Then you couldn't have come to the conclusion the Gemara came to prove the fact that the kelim of the mocher are irrelevant. Maybe it has nothing to do with that. Maybe it has to do with the fact that he's doing a kinyan mishicha over here. That's why he's successful. It has nothing to do with the kelim of the mocher being irrelevant. And therefore, he says, it has nothing to do whether he does the kinyan mishicha or the pirka, the unloading before or after. It has to do with the fact that it's in his property now. Once the items are unloaded into his property is successful through a kinyan chatzer in acquiring all that's in there, even though the kelim of the mocher are sitting there. And that's the proof to the fact that the kelim of the mocher are irrelevant. Just like the kelim of the mocher are irrelevant, which it says, lo kana, so to the kelim of the lokeach will be irrelevant in the property of the mocher. So the Rashbam uses this conclusion of the Gemara to prove that the case here isn't the case where he has to set the price before unloading. Could be even after the unloading he sets the price, because once they're in his property can do the acquisition once the price has been concluded. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, b'sheshaf chan. It's a case where he dumped them out. Who says over here that he has the kelim of the mocher? Who says that they're still in the sacks of the mocher? You made an assumption that they unloaded the animals, and when they unloaded the animals, then the sacks of the mocher were still interfering between the property of the lokeach and the items or the produce that's inside of it. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, just say that he unloaded it by opening up the sacks and dumping it into his property. Rav says, Ikpid Rava. Rava was upset about this
because he was the Bala Memra, and here someone was trying to undermine the proof that he brought.
Remember that Rava is a Talmud Muvak of Rav Nachman Stam in the Gemara. Rav Rashi in a couple places thinks that Stam Rav Nachman in the Gemara is Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, whereas the Bali Tosafot believe that it's Rav Nachman bar Yaakov is Stam Rav Nachman. Over here it seems to favor the view of the Tosafot because Rava is getting upset at Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. It was Rav Nachman his Rebbe. Be hard to argue that Rova would be getting upset at his Rebbe. Midei shofchan k'tani, pirkan k'tani. How can you explain the Braita as a case where he dumped it out of the sacks of the mocher? That's not what the Braita says. The Braita says he unloaded the donkeys. Unloading the donkeys doesn't mean he opened up the sacks and dumped the produce out. It means he took it out on the sacks. Unloading simply means to take whatever's there and put it down on the ground. It does not mean to empty out whatever the kelim that are holding the produce out. Therefore, he says it is a good proof because your explanation or your kimta in the Braita doesn't necessarily play out based on the language that we have. Wait a minute, it could be a case where we're talking about heads of garlic or stalks that have the garlic on them, and therefore they get bundled without any sack. So that normally when you're talking about produce or grains, rice, things like that, you have to put them into a sack because they can't be transported because they are smaller, looser items. So what he's suggesting is, who says over here that which he's transporting was something small that had to be in a sack? Maybe it was something larger that was just simply bundled on the back of the donkey. And now he's unloading those bundles, and therefore there is no kelim de mocher over here to prove it. So the conclusion we wanted to draw was that the kelim of lokeach are not successful in the possession of the mocher, based on this case where he was unloading the donkeys and putting them in his possession, and it worked. The lokeach's kinyan worked, which means the mocher is lo kana. Since the mocher is lo kana, he's irrelevant in this case. You see that the chatzer of the individual overrides the kelim. The Gemara in the end said, can't conclude from this bright to anything, because either the first attempt to undermine it was to say shofchan, he dumped him out of the kelim. Rava rejected that because it says pirkan and not shofchan. But then we came up with another possibility, which is that you could be unloading bundles of something, and there may be no kelim of the mocher involved here at all. Based on that, you can't draw any conclusion. The Gemara now, as a sidebar, asked, why is it that you need psika? Why do you need a conclusion on price in order for the kinyan to work? Over there it says he unloaded it. Mali pasak, mali lo pasak. Why does it make a difference whether he has the price set, or he doesn't have the price set? If he's unloaded it, he has a kinyan of ba, he has a kinyan of his chatzer, once they're in his chatzer. Why should it matter as to whether he's set the price or not set the price? Amalei, pasak sam chadate, the price is set, they have now concluded, and people have gemirat hadat, that this transaction is complete. Lo pasak, lo sam chadate. If the price is yet to be determined, nobody is conclusive about this type of transaction because they always worry that someone will change their mind afterwards or the fact that they won't come to agreement on price. And the Gemara says here what the Rashbam has been saying all along. Of course, based on this Gemara, which is without price, nothing happens. Price is the ultimate item that you need in place in order for a transaction to work. Without price, no transactions work because there can always be a difference in price between what the buyer thinks and what the seller thinks, and nobody has gemira to dat without that. So Amalei Ravina the Ravashi Tashma. Ravin Shmuel de Amrei Tavayu. Here we have a selective quote from Ravin Shmuel, which is Ravin Shmuel both say Kelev Shel Adam Koneh Lo B'Chol Makom, that the kelim of an individual are able to acquire on his behalf anywhere. If you remember, Rabbi Shmuel's statement did not end there. Rabbi Shmuel say that Kelav Shadam Kolim B'chol Makom Chutz Mirishut Rabim. Here they just don't quote that latter half, Chutz Mirishut Rabim, which led to the difference with Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish and the whole story of yesterday's daf about whether in Rishut Rabim or not the Kelim can acquire. But now the Gemara wants to know that to Amai. What does it mean, B'chol Makom? What does it mean, anywhere they can acquire? Lav La'atui Rishut Mocher. Isn't it coming to tell you that even in the possession or the property of the Mocher, the Kelim and the Lokeach would be successful at acquiring? It says, no, Hatam Damar Le Zilkenei. Here is the key difference between the question of the Gemara and these cases where we can draw a conclusion, which is, in the case where the Mocher says Zilkenei, go and take possession of it, then the Kelim and the Lokeach are successful. They are successful because of the fact that the Mocher basically granted him rights over here. When he says Zil Kanei, take possession of it, he's either saying to him, I'm giving you or I'm lending you the property underneath it so that your Kelim can take possession of it, or he's saying that your Kelim are not batel to my property because I'm giving you independent rights over here by telling you to take possession of it. So in that case, yes, for sure, the Kelim and the Lokeach are successful at acquiring in the property of the Mocher. Our question in the Gemara is Stam, when the Mocher never makes any statement. Do the Kelim of the Mokeach work in that case, independent of the Mocher's declaration? Do we say that you need them either to lend the property to the Lokeach so that he's successful, or do we say that the Mocher has to declare that his property is not overriding the independent ownership of the Kelim of the Lokeach? But without that, Zilkenei, maybe you would say that the Mocher's property overrides the Kelim of the Lokeach, or if he doesn't lend him property, then the Kelim don't do anything. That's the question of the Gemara. In the case without Zilkenei, do we assume it's as if he said Zilkenei and it works? Or do we not say that and therefore there's a difference? So that's what the Gemara concludes over here. Even though we found a case which seemingly tells us exactly what we want to know, which is Rav and Shmuel saying that the Kelim of the Lokeach work everywhere, including in the possession of the Mocher. Gemara says, no, because over there he said Zilkenei. That Zilkenei changes the dynamic of the case. And our question is in a case without the Zilkenei, without the instructions of the Mocher. Right, it's not Otam. So now the Gemara jumps into basically using the Tosefta that we brought in yesterday's daf. The Tosefta had a number of sections to it. What they were trying to prove from the Tosefta about the Kelim of the Lokeach B'Rishut HaMocher. Now the Gemara is going to bring other cases from different places in Shas and try to conclude about those cases from that Tosefta. So using the Tosefta, because it was a very large Tosefta, it's coming along and trying to give us information about them. The truth is that the Rashbam says that in all these cases, Gemara should use the term Meitaveh or something along those lines to bring a question. But because the Gemara is going to do so many of these and it's in the context of the Tosefta, the Gemara doesn't preface any of these items with a meitve or a question. It just says, tashma, or it says, look at the Tosefta. So the Gemara, given the context, assumes you know what it's trying to do. It says, since we use this Tosefta for many questions on the way, it doesn't use meitve. So since it's already used the Tosefta so many times, it says tashma rather than meitve, even though we're dealing with a memorot of Amoraim over here, and they're being challenged by Tanaic works. But since this Tosefta is so central to the questions at hand, since the Tosefta has been used so many times, it becomes basically the context for the Gemara, and therefore the Gemara says tashma instead of meitve. Just Tan Rabbanan. This is a Mishnah in Kiddushin. We've seen it many times. Tan Hotam. Echasim sheyesh lehem achrayut, miknim bekesef b'shtar b'chazaka. Real property has the ability to be acquired either through monetary transaction, through the payment of money, through a shtar, which says that my field is sold to you, or through chazakah, which is doing something to the property to demonstrate ownership. Now, gadaru paratz. Those are the items that are mentioned by the Mishnah. She'en lehem achrayut, mitaltalin, einik naim ele mishicha. Then, when it comes to items that are not real property, mitaltalin, they can only be acquired through a kinyan mishicha. B'sura matnalu lahashmaitel mishmei de Rav Chisda. In Surah, they would ask this question and put this qualifier in the name of Rav Chisda. B'pumbadita matnalu la mishmei de Rav Kahana. In Pumbadita, they would say it was Rav Kahana who said it. B'amri la mishmei de Rava. And some say it was in the name of Rava. So you have three different attributions to this qualification of the Mishnah, which is Lo Shanu Elo Dvarim Shein Darkam Lagbia. Kinyan Mishicha is only successful when a Kinyan Agbah is invalid. Aval Dvarim Shein Darkam Lagbia. If this is an item that normally is lifted up, then Hagbah in Mishicha Lo. But if you do it with a Kinyan Agbah, it works. If you do it with a Kinyan Mishicha, it does not work. What's clear from here in the Gemara is that Kinyan Agbah is the primary form of Kinyan for Metaltalin. If you want to take possession of Metaltalin, you pick them up, and that's how you take it into your possession. They are Metaltalin. They are to be moved from location to location. The way that the bright, the Tosefta we saw before terms it is, that he lifted it to take it from place to place. As the Rishpam points out, he doesn't literally have to walk from place to place. As soon as he picks it up, you have the Kinyan Agbah. Normally, when someone picks something up, they're picking it up to take it into their possession. So that's why it terms it that way. But it's not necessary for you to move. But a Kinyan Agbah is the greatest form or demonstration of ownership, is that you're lifting up the object that you're trying to acquire. And that is the primary or the best form of Kinyan. After that, you have other forms of Kinyanim that work in cases where Agbah can work. So for instance, when you're doing large animals, lifting up a large animal is not realistic. So then you have to do an alternate form of Kinyan. The other forms of Kinyan are Mishicha and Misira. Those are the other forms that you have. We saw back on Daf Ayin Vav, there's a major machloket between the Balei HaTosafot and Rashi and the Rishbam as to whether which of those two is a better Kinyan. Is a Kinyan Mishicha better or is a Kinyan Misira better? Because if whichever one is better, then you could use it for both items. If we said a Kinyan Mishicha is better, that means that if the Mishnah or the Gemara offers you the opportunity to do a Kinyan Misira, you could do either a Misira, a Mishicha, or a Agbah, because Misira would be the lowest form of Kinyan. That is the view of the Balei Tosafot. The view of the Rashi and the Rishbam is the other way around, that a Kinyan Misira is stronger than a Kinyan Mishicha. A Kinyan Mishicha is the lowest form of Kinyan, Misira is a higher form of Kinyan. And therefore, if it says Kinyan Misira, you cannot use a Kinyan Mishicha, because Misira is a higher form of Kinyan. So now here what the Gemara is saying is, clearly Hagbah is better than Mishicha. And if you have the ability to do a Kinyan Hagbah, and you opt for Mishicha, it's not going to work. Mishicha is a subpar form of Kinyan, and only if we permit you to do a Kinyan Mishicha will Mishicha work. And that's what the qualification says. Kinyan Mishicha is only valid where normally that's the way people would acquire such items, and a Kinyan Agbah is not realistic in those situations. But if you did do a Kinyan Agbah, of course it would be successful, because that is the primary Kinyan we'd want you to use. So that's the qualification. Yotev Abaye, v'kamer la'ay shmaitita. So Abaye was saying over this memra, Eitvei Rav Adav Armatna la'abaye. So Rav Adav Armatna challenged Abaye and says, Hagonev kis bishabbat chayav. A person who steals a wallet on Shabbat is chayav. Shkvar nitchayev b'gneiva kodem sheyavol lidei yisur Shabbat. Because he becomes obligated in the theft before he violates the Isur of Shabbat. This is in the sugya of Kamli Derabaminei. It's a situation in which a person who is subject to the death penalty waives all monetary penalties. I mean, there is no punishment or monetary penalties because of Kamli Derabaminei. The Gemara there alludes it either out from the case where a person bumps into a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, that the Torah says, Vim lo yeason, the woman is not killed or injured in a manner that causes her to die, Dem natan biflilim, he's obligated to pay for the miscarriage. Implying that if something happened to the woman, there was a fatality there, then he does not have to pay for the miscarriage because of Kamlei Derabaminei. The other limud comes from either Kedei Rishato. You can only punish him once, you can't punish him twice, which is that if he's already subject to the death penalty, he doesn't have to pay. So this is a situation in which he stole, which would make him chayav in a monetary compensation, and he also violated Shabbat because he carried from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, so he is now in violation of Shabbat. He's subject to the death penalty for Shabbat. In the first case that is brought over here, the case is a case where they are separate. The Gneva is completed, the theft is completed before the violation of Shabbat. In that case, he'll be chayav to repay the Gneva because the two were not simultaneous. His death penalty came afterwards. Hayah migarer v'yotze, if he's dragging it along to take it out of the property, patur. Then he is patur, sharei yisur Shabbat b'gneva b'ayin ke'achad. then the Isur of Gneva and Shabbat come simultaneously. This is an instance where if he picks it up, the item, then he takes possession of it immediately, which means he's a thief. Because he took possession of it immediately, he's chayav to compensate for the theft. When he walks out of the owner's property with the item, then he's chayav for Shabbat, because he went from Reshut Yechid to Reshut Rabim. The cases or the problems are separate. In that case, he's going to be chayav for the gneva, and also chayav a death penalty or chatat, depending on what the circumstances is, for the violation of Shabbat. In the instance where he drags it along the ground, then he never takes possession of it until it leaves the property of the original owner. You can't do a kinyan mishicha in the property of the owner. Kinyan mishicha only works for you to take it out of the property of the owner into a different area. Now, another area you have to take it out is an area where you have some sort of rights. You can't drag it out into the Reshut HaRabim because there neither of you have rights. It has to be that you do a kinyan mishicha either into your own property or you do it into a simta, into an area which is sides of the Reshut HaRabim, or the Gemara there offers another alternative, which we'll discuss in one case and a second, which is that the person moves it onto his hand that is out in the Reshut HaRabim, but his hand is determined to be a separate entity that is 4x4 and allows for a, what's called an akira v'anacha, to uproot it and then put it down. So now, in this case, where he drags it to the edge of the property, the gneva and the violation of Shabbat happen simultaneously. That is, once he crosses the property line, going from Reshut HaYechid to Reshut HaRabim, that's when the gneva takes place, that's when the mishicha is successful, that's also when you can become chayav for the violation of Shabbat. Now, it's not so simple that that is the case. The Gemara in Ketubot deals with this, which is, how did that exactly work? If he went from Reshut HaYechid to Reshut HaRabim directly, kinyan mishicha is not successful. So there's no gneva to speak about at all, because the kinyan mishicha was unsuccessful. So that's what I just said to you. Either he takes it into the Tzidei Reshut HaRabim, which for terms of Shabbat, at least according to Rabbi Eliezer, and to some of the Tanaim, is considered to be Reshut HaRabim, and you'll be chayav for it. But as far as kinyanim for gneva or other items, the simta is a quote-unquote makom shel shnehem. It's a place where everybody has rights to use it, and therefore, not like Reshut HaRabim, but you have a right to use it. Put your stuff there on a personal basis, and therefore you will be able to make a kinyan. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is what I mentioned before, is that he moves it onto his hand, which is within 3 tefachim of the ground. If he moves it from the Reshut HaYechid onto his hand, which is in 3 tefachim of the ground, his hand is considered to be a makom of Dalet al Dalet, but he's below 3 tefachim. So within 3 tefachim, it's batel to the karka, to the Reshut HaRabim. But as far as a kinyan for Gneva, his hand will be successful at creating the change from the Reshut of the owner to the Reshut of the Ganav. So in one of those two ways, he's able to move the item from the property of the owner into his possession, but yet still be chayav for Shabbat because he's in Reshut HaRabim. So that's what you have to do. You're balancing between it, getting to Reshut HaRabim, because that's why you're chayav in Shabbat. But you need to get it to a location where he has enough ownership to establish ownership through a kinyan mishicha. So that's what we were trying to solve over here. So now you have a problem, which is, what was he dragging out of the property? It said here, a gonev kis. He stole a wallet. He stole a money pouch. A money pouch is an item that everybody clearly believes you can do a kinyan hagbah on, because it's a light or a small item. So now, what did it say here? That he dragged it out to the edge of the property, and then he got possession of it. Why are we even talking about him getting possession of it? That's a kinyan mishicha bimakom shel hagbah, where you should have been doing a kinyan hagbah. And you just said to me that when you can do a kinyan hagbah, kinyan mishicha is unsuccessful. Tzamalei bimitna. It has strings on it. It has tie strings or draw strings on it. It says, ananami bimitna kamina. It says, I'm talking about a wallet too, or a money pouch that has strings on it. He says, Amalei, bimide de boy mitna. No, I'm saying that someday it needs the ropes and the strings on the pouch. It is so heavy that there's no way to carry it out. I mean, that's too hard to lift up, or that's not the normal way to move it because of the weight of the item. So at first he thought, when he said mitna, he thought he was talking about a small wallet, a small purse that has drawstrings on it, has ropes on it. He says, I said the same thing. I'm talking about that case as well. He says, no, you misunderstood. I'm talking about an item that requires the ropes or the strings because you can't move it without that. So the case here is a case gadol, and that solves the problem, because then a kinyan mishicha would be successful.
It's just interesting to note here that Tosafot says that later on the Masechta, The Gemara says that he's unsuccessful at picking up a bag of shtarot because he didn't do a kinyan mishicha. What do you mean a kinyan mishicha? If you say over here that the only way to do a kinyan when you have the ability to do akbah is akbah, why is a kinyan mishicha relevant by a bag of shtarot? And tell us what it says. I'm unwilling to explain that it's a bag that's so full of shtarot that the only way to pick it up is a kinyan mishicha. Tell us what it says. They're just using a generic term to say there's no proper kinyan over here. Doesn't literally mean mishicha, but rather there was no formal kinyan that was made over here. It's only interesting to note this because the Tosfot suggests back in 9:5 when it spoke about kinyan mishicha or kinyan misira with otiot niknot be misira or otiot niknot be mishicha, that has to be a case erech lefresh besak malei shtarot shein derech lagbia. It's a sack full of shtarot that you're unable to lift up. So it's interesting just that Tosfot entertained that possibility back in Ayin Vav and Aleph, and over here in Pei Vav and Aleph, he's unwilling to entertain that possibility to explain a Gemara further on the Masechta on Daf Kuf Nun Aleph. So now Gemara says, Tashma, let us look at the Tosefta. That is what I said before. The Gemara doesn't say Meitave. It should say Meitave over here because we're asking from a Tanaic work, a Tosefta. But he keeps saying Tashma as if we're in the middle of this Tosefta, and that's why it doesn't use the normal language you would expect. Tashma. Bishud Mocher, lo kana ad shig biena. Then in the Bishud of the Mocher, you're not kone until you lift it up. O ad shiotziena mir shuto. Or until you take it out of his property. So here, the Tosefta offers you two alternatives for a kinyan when the object is in the possession of the seller. One option is kinyan agba. The other option is ad shiotziena mir shuto, kinyan mishicha. Sounds like you have an object in the Mocher's possession. Take your choice. You want to do a kinyan agbah, or you want to do a kinyan mishicha? That means that they are interchangeable. Alma, mide de bar agbah, ibay agbah kanile, ibay mishina kanile. If you have something that you can do agbah on, you have a choice. Do a kinyan agbah, or do a kinyan mishicha. And so you see from the Tosefta that that's what you're saying is not right. That agbah is not an exclusive type of kinyan. Amrav Nachman bar Yitzchak, let's study him, Tony. It's very easy to understand the Tosefta and to say that there are two different cases here, which is mide de bar agbah, things that you know me do agbah on, agbah will be successful in the possession of the mocher. Mide bar mishicha be mishicha, things that you normally do a kinyan mishicha on, then you could have done a kinyan mishicha because you can't do agbah. Then mishicha will be successful. It's not telling you the same object you can do both kinyanim on. It's telling you that an object that you would do agbah on, agbah works. An object you would do mishicha on, mishicha works. Now both the Balei Tosafot and the Rishbam ask over here, Tema the Rishbam, the Tosafot says, Amai lo moki la b'kelim shein darkam la'agbia. It's very easy to set up the Tosafot as a case where it's something that requires mishicha. It's so heavy that it requires mishicha. We said before that if you require a mishicha, or you can use a mishicha, that offers you both alternatives. You can do a kinyan mishicha, but if you want, you can do a kinyan agbah. Kinyan agbah is the better of the two kinyanim. If I say to you, you can do mishicha, I'm offering you the alternative of a subpar kinyan and saying it works. But that doesn't preclude your ability to use a kinyan agbah. So why didn't the Gemara just answer? The case in the Tosefta is a case where it's an item that is so heavy that you would use a kinyan mishicha. And you want to do a kinyan agbah? Go ahead. That would work also. But kinyan mishicha also works over here. And that could have been the easy solution to the problem. Rishbam says that. He says, Ufi anyutati nearly davali matzali terutze hochi. Bemidi the bar mishicha askina. Just talking about a case where it's a case of mishicha. So the Rishbam says, Ein Hachanami, the Gemara could have answered that and came up with a different answer. But Ein Hachanami could have answered that it was an object that was subject to mishicha, and therefore you could use both, mishicha and agbah. I think the possible way to deflect this question of the Balei Tosafot, or what the Rishbam is saying, that it was an alternative answer, is to say that Tosefta seems to be speaking stam. Doesn't seem to be specifying any object. It seems to be giving you general principles about objects, not telling you about one object that's heavy or not heavy, it's talking about objects in general, and therefore you would not conclude that we're talking about an object that's mishicha, and that's why the Gemara came to the conclusion that it's the tzadim. It doesn't give the answer of mishicha, or this is an object that is subject to mishicha. Tashma, ha-mucher peirot de-chaveiro, mashach velo madad. This is our Mishnah. Mucher peirot de-chaveiro, someone sells fruits to his friend, mashach velo madad. He does a kinyan mishicha, but does not measure it. Kani, he's successful. Va'peirot to bnei agbah ninu. Fruits in general are something you can lift up. And it's a kinyan agbah. And over here it says, mashach. A kinyan mishicha, without the medida, is successful. Viktani de kani, be mishicha. You're able to acquire it through a mishicha.
It says, Achav Askinan Bishlife Ravrave. Talking about, call it a long sleeve. We're talking about items that are in something that is very long, and therefore it's unable to be lifted up. Whether it's the produce itself that is very long, or that which it's contained in, which is very long, you're unable to do a Kinyan Agbah because they are just too big in order to do a Kinyan Agbah. So now, if you're talking about something that is small in nature, which would be the normal way to explain our Mishnah, we'll see in a second why, because the latter half of the Mishnah speaks about Pishtan. And over there it says that a Kinyan Agbah is what you need by Pishtan. So the fact that you can lift up the Pishtan at the end of the Mishnah would seem to imply that at the beginning of the Mishnah, you're talking about items that you could lift up. So why does a Kinyan Mishicha work by the Perot in the beginning of the Mishnah and not in the latter half of the Mishnah? So that the Rashbam explains. He says that the Mishicha Koshu Mahanya BePerot, a Mishicha works by Perot, even though you should have been using a Kinyan Agbah, Shei Davar Mu'atu. It's a small item. U'Mishichat Koshu Ne'akar Kulo Mimkomo. When you make a small movement of the item, it's as if you lifted the whole item up. By definition, doing Mishicha on small amounts of fruits or these small wraps or small sleeves would result in a Kinyan Agbah. And what our Mishnah is saying, if we did not have this problem and we were not worried about this issue that you can't flip between a Kinyan Agbah and Mishicha, we'd explain the Mishnah in the following manner, which is that Pishtan is different than regular fruits. Regular fruits, which are small items, when you do a Mishicha on them, it's the equivalent of doing Agbah. And that's why you're successful. Pishtan, which are very long items, when you do a Kinyan Mishicha on them, you're only able to move a portion of them. You can't move the whole item off the ground because they're just too long. They're too big or they're too long. And because of that, when you pull it, you're only pulling one side of it, even though the other side's dragging along. That's still a Mishicha, that's not Agbah. And so therefore, the Mishnah demands that you do a Kinyan Agbah on Pishtan. But another peirot says the Kinyan Mishicha works because the Kinyan Mishicha, another peirot, is the equivalent of a Kinyan Hagbah. That's how you would have read the Mishnah in its simplest form, is to explain that the difference between fruits and Pishtan are, fruits are smaller contained items. When you lift them up, when you move them or drag them, the whole item moves in one shot. And therefore you are doing equivalent of a Kinyan Hagbah through your Mishicha. Your Mishicha is moving the whole item as if it's a Kinyan Hagbah. By Pishtan, which are very long, when you move one side of it, the other side's still dragging on the ground. And therefore, you don't have a Kinyan Agbah in that case, or you don't have a full-fledged Kinyan Mishicha.
The way that the Ritva phrases is that maybe small things, people normally use a Kinyan Mishicha, and big things, people use a Kinyan Agbah. And in that way, we could explain the difference between Perot and Pishtan. But now, if you made everything into big items, then how do you explain the difference between the Mishicha of the Reisha and the Agbah of the Seifa?
Given that would be the explanation of the Mishnah. The problem is now that you're saying, no, since Perot can be done through a Kinyan Agbah, then Kinyan Mishicha is unsuccessful. Now, if you tell me Kinyan Mishicha is unsuccessful, then now you have to reinterpret the beginning of the Mishnah and say that the beginning of the Mishnah is talking about an object that's very long or fruits that are very long. Once you do that, you've lost the whole difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. Before we explain the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa is that the fruits in the Reisha are small, and the Pishtan in the Seifa is long. So that's why in the Reisha, Mishicha works, and why Mishicha doesn't work in the Seifa. Rashbam says, even according to Rav, who says by a boat, when you move the boat a little bit, it moves the whole boat, that's maybe because it's floating on the water, and the movement of one part of the boat moves the whole boat. But by Perot, if you move the smaller Perot, fine. When you're talking about a lot of an object, and you pull a little bit of it, that doesn't mean you really moved the whole object. It just means you moved one side of it, the other side still is dragging on the ground. Maybe that's not called the Kinyan Mishicha. That's the way we would have learned the Mishnah. But now you're telling us, oh, something that has a din in Agbah, you can't do Mishicha. So now I'm stuck in the Reisha to say the Reisha is also a case where they're so long that you can't do Agbah on them. You have to do a Kinyan Mishicha. Well, now if the Perot in the Reisha are long and the Pishtan is long, what's the difference between the Reisha where Mishicha works and the Sefer where only Agbah works? Why is there a difference anymore? That's the Gemara's question now. He says, how come I skim Mishlifei Rave Yochim a Sefer? What are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah? Alokeach Pishtan mechaviro, lo kana ad shiitalteinu mimakom zeh lemakom acher. You do not acquire it until you do a Kinyan Agbah. This is where the Rashbam says, mimakom lemakom is not necessary. Makom lemakom is just a natural way. When somebody picks something up, they're planning on taking it to somewhere else. But a Kinyan Agbah works even without your carrying it to somewhere else. Where it says, atu pishtan mishlifei rabbevei milo avdei. Since when are Pishtan not in longer holds or longer type of wrapping or sleeves that are holding them. Where it says, Shani Pishtan Dimishtamit. Pishtan slides away or it slides out. The question of whether it means it slides out of the packaging or the item that it's kept in, or whether the Pishtan itself is so delicate that it falls apart when you pull it along the ground. Therefore, people don't drag it along the ground. Even though it's in a longer item or a longer sack, and most people would do a kinyan mishkan on that item, when it contains pishtan, the pishtan is too delicate in order to perform a kinyan mishkan and not a kinyan agbah.
The Rabbeinu Gershom offers a slight different alternative, which is the fact that pishtan is easy to break up the bundles in order to carry them. So therefore, a kinyan mishicha is not as relevant there because you always can do a kinyan agbah by breaking it down into smaller component parts, which is possible by pishtan, but not possible by other fruits or other items that are bundled or packaged together.
So what the Gemara answers in the end is, to avoid this problem or protect this qualification, is to say that kinyan agbah is exclusive. Can't do a kinyan mishicha when agbah is possible. Therefore, in the ratio, we're talking about a long sack or sleeve, we're talking about long fruits, whatever vegetation you're speaking about. And therefore, the kinyan mishicha is the way you can do it, because a kinyan agbah would not necessarily be the normal way to do this. The sefer where pishtan is also long, and a kinyan mishicha should work, it fails because of the nature of pishtan. Pishtan slides away or falls apart, or it slides out of your hands. It's slippery, and if you pull it that way, it would slide out of your hands, and people will not carry it in that way, but through masa'ot gedolot. That's what the Rashbam says. People don't pick it up that way. People are not going to pack it in a way that it becomes a very heavy package that you need to drag, because it won't work so well. It'll either ruin the items themselves, or it'll slide out of the packaging. And because of that, we don't allow you to acquire it in that manner. You have to do a kinyan agbah. Because the normal way to pack pishtan is a way that it's light enough to do a kinyan agbah, and therefore a kinyan mishicha is not successful in that case. All right, now the Gemara continues. Tashma, beim agasa, niknei b'misira. A heavy-duty animal, the way that you acquire it is through handing over the reins. Again, we've seen this about whether you need it miyad b'yad, it has to be from hand to hand, or is it enough that it's lech uknei, that the seller says you go take possession of it? So that machloket, again, the Rishpam and Rashi on one side, the Balei Tosafot on the other side, but handing over the reins. Vadaka, the lighter animals, be'agba. There's a difference between heavy animals, where you use a kinyan mesira, and lighter animals, where you use a kinyan agba. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon Elazar. That's the position of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Chamim armim, be'im adaka, be'mishicha. The lighter animals, you use a kinyan mishicha. Va'be'im adaka, de'bar agbahi. It's clear that you have the ability to lift up the lighter animals because Rabbi Meir requires you to do a kinyan agbah. Well, if you can do a kinyan agbah, why are the chachamim allowing you to do a kinyan mishicha? Should not work. Dani the kani b'mishicha. I said, shani behema the sarcha. Animals are different because either they plant themselves in the ground, which is that they make it difficult for you to lift them up. So even though a kinyan agbah might work with a lighter animal, the chachamim tell you, you don't have to do it that way because a kinyan agbah is difficult in these situations. Because the sircha, the Rashbam brings two possibilities of how to interpret the word. Mistarechet umiddabeket biraglea bakarka. It plants itself, it digs itself into the ground, it doesn't let you pick it up. And therefore, you can't, the kinyan agbah would be difficult, that's why you're allowed to do a kinyan mishicha. Or, the possibility brings from the Rabbeinu Chananel that sircha means soretet. Lemishon sruch now. It's a shoelace. That it means like to string along. Or, I don't know if it means stringy or floppy.
Or maybe to kick or scratch.
It's something that is not easily lifted. It's not something that comes up easily. Or it comes together in one shot. It's either floppy, or it's dragged out, or drags itself out. And therefore, it's, the hagbah is a very difficult form of kinyan on a lighter form of animal. And therefore, you much prefer to do a kinyan mishicha. And that's why the Chachamim allow it here. It's an exception to the rule, not the rule itself. Okay, now we move on to another topic. Again, the relevance of it here is that we're going to ask from the Tosefta that we brought before. Rav Shmuel d'Amrei Tavayu, kor b'shloshim, ani mocher lecha. I'm willing to sell you a kor which is made up of 30 sa'ah for 30 sela. That means that basically I'm selling you a sa'ah b'sela. Selling you one sa'ah for a sela, that gives you a total of 30 sa'ah for 30. But he frames it in the following price manner, which is, I'm selling you a whole kor for 30. Yochol lachzor bo afilu b'sachrona. He starts to count out and measure out for him the amount that he's selling him, and he gets to 29. Even though as he's doing it, sa basa, as it goes along, he's taking it into his possession. The transaction is not complete until the 30th sa'ah is put in place, until the full kor is put in place. On the other hand, if he states the sale in the following manner, kor b'shloshim, if you buy a kor, it costs 30. Sa'ah b'sela, if you buy it a sa'ah at a time, it's a sela. I mean, the reason that it's kor b'shloshim is because of sa'ah b'sela. Ani mocher lecha, I'm willing to sell it to you, rishon rishon kana. In that case, as each one is counted out or given over to his possession, he is kunet. The difference being whether he is demanding that a certain quantity be sold to get that price. In the first case, he states the price in terms of 30 sa'ah for 30 sela. It sounds like from that the quantity is important. Maybe to the buyer, maybe to the seller. The buyer wants to buy that big quantity, and he doesn't want it in piecemeal, and that's why he demanded 30. Or the seller is pricing it for him and then saying, I'll give it you at that price if you buy 30 sa'ah because I'm willing to give you the price. I'm not offering you the price for smaller amounts. That means that the transaction is about the entire quantity. And therefore, until the entire quantity is brought over, given to the other party, the transaction is not complete. You have no kinyan there whatsoever. In the second case, you stated the price in two ways. You stated as 30 sa'ah for 30 sela, which is the kor for shloshim. Or you also said that's the equivalent of sa'ah b'sela. That wasn't necessary for you to say that. We could have figured out ourselves that a kor b'shloshim means a sa'ah b'sela. The fact that you said sa'ah b'sela seems to indicate that that is the price. The price is you want to buy a sa'ah, you pay a sela. That means that as each sa'ah goes, there is a transaction that's complete because you're willing to sell at that price even at smaller quantities. And given that, the pricing will allow you to have a kinyan as it goes along. And that's what it says here, rishon, rishon, kana. As each sa'ah is passed to the buyer, he's kunah. If he stops at 3, stops at 5, he stops at 7, then that part of the transaction is done. You cannot reverse it. He has to pay for it. The remainder, they can walk away from because it has yet to be acquired by the buyer. Tashma, imaitam midah shel echad mehem. If the measuring cup belonged to one of the two parties, meaning either the buyer or the seller, rishon, rishon, kana. As each thing goes into it, he acquires it. Va'afagav, delo mitnala hamida. Even though the midah has not been filled until the top. So here is a case where he bought the item, or he bought a fixed quantity, and in buying the fixed quantity, we say that as it goes into the measuring cup, it is successful at acquiring whatever is in the measuring cup. So we're talking about a case where it's obviously the measuring cup of the lokeach, and it's his measuring cup either in his simta, which is a reshut shos shneihem, or it's in the reshut of the mocher, where he says that your kelim can acquire here, lechuknei, like we saw before, where the kelim and lokeach is successful. There the Tosefta told us before, rishon, rishon, kana. You are successful. As the item goes into your measuring cup, you acquire it as it goes in. Why? He sold them the fixed amount. He sold them the whole measuring cup's worth. Whatever that measure is, a hin, whatever you want to pick as, that he sold them that amount. And now he's starting to pour it in there. We're saying that as it's pouring in there, he's acquiring each piece of it, even though he bought the full quantity. That goes against what Rabbi Shmuel said, because Rabbi Shmuel said when you specify a full quantity, you don't acquire it until you've completed the full quantity. Rabbi says, go on Damrale. No, it's where he specified the price in the following manner. Hin, bishnei masar slaim. A hin, which is made up of 12 log. I'm selling you a hin for 12 sela. Or in essence, sela le log. And he says that, log besela, ani mocher lecha. I'm selling it to you of a log at the sela. Therefore, as you go along, each log is considered to be a sale. And that's what it means, rishon, rishon kana. Similar to what Rav Kahana says, as the Baal Tosafot point out, that Rav Kahana doesn't say this, it's a Mishnah. It's an explicit Mishnah. The point is that Rav Kahana brought it in another Gemara. He brings that Mishnah and applies it to another case in the Gemara. Therefore, the Gemara just attributes it to Rav Kahana, even though it's an explicit Mishnah, which is, Shinatot Ayu Bahin. The hin is a measuring cup that is found in the Beit HaMikdash. It contains 12 lug in it. The problem is that you need alternate sizes, not just a hin, which is 12 log, We laid it all through Pesach. We just finished it, but all the korbanot require that you have chatzi ahin lapar, a shlishit ahin la'ayil, and a revit ahin la'kevis. That means that a chatzi ahin means six mog for a par is brought as a wine libation. You have a shlishit ahin, which is four log for an ayil as a wine libation. And then you have a revit ahin for a kevis, which is three log for a kevis that is a wine libation. So you need three, four, and six log. Meantime, the mikdash, they only have a measuring cup that measures 12 log. So how are you ever going to get three, four, and six if you only have a 12 log? So what the Mishnah in Midot says is that shnatot ayuba. There were markings inside of the hin that told you how far up you were. Or basically, there were log measurements along the way. So that way you could look at it. The equivalent of what we have in our cases today, measuring cups that are made out of glass, and you have markings along the way that you can fill it up to certain points. In their day, they didn't have it in glass. They had something, kli cheres, that was holding it. But along the way, they would make indentations in the kli cheres to indicate that you've reached 3 log, 4 log, you've reached 6 log, you've reached the total would be, a hin is 12 log. By doing that, then as you go along, each measure has significance to it. And that's what happens here. Akhanami, shnatot ayuba midot. In the case of the Tosefta, there also were markings in the item. So therefore, when the lokeach brings his kli over, and the mocher starts to pour into it, if there was no markings in there, then there'd be only one measurement. That's the totality of the measuring cup, which is a hin, 12 log. But now that it has markings along the way, those are pit stops along the way that say, when you reach that point, there's a sale. Because he defined the pricing based on log. Sell off for a log. So that means every log that you can identify, or any clear measure you can identify, will be a completion of a sale. That means if he fills it up halfway, then that 6 log, that transaction's done. You can back out of the latter 6 log, but the first 6 log, he cannot back out of. The Rishbam says that even though it seems, and there were girsot like this, that asked the question not from the case over here of Rishon Kana, but from rather the Seifa of the Tosefta, that says that, Rishud Lokeach, Kemich Kibil Alav, Mocher, Kana Lokeach, that in the possession of Lokeach, as soon as the Mocher accepts the price, Kana Lokeach, which seemingly indicates that as soon as it goes into the possession of Lokeach, he acquires it, which would be a problem for Rav and Shmuel's statement as well. Why did the Rashbam reject that Girsa, reject that? He says, because it's just not true. He says that the case in that Seifa of the Tosefta is a case where Nitmala Kula. He put all the stuff together and put it in there. And how do I know that? Because it's a case of where there's a Kinyan without Medida. There was no Medida, there was no measuring over there. And from the Mishnah, you see it says, Mashach v'lo Madad. So there was a Mishicha without Medida. It sounds like he took the whole item in one shot. And he says, even more so, from the Mishnah you would have asked, Mashach v'lo Madad. Sounds like you don't need Medida at all to acquire it. And therefore he says that the Seif of the Tosefta is not a question at all. And the real question is from the Reisha. The other hand, if you look in the Balei Tosafot, they disagree with the Rashbam and say that the reason the Gemara asked from the Reisha, not the Seifa, is just because the Reisha comes first. So they ask a question from the Reisha, and once they solve the problem of the Reisha, that solution is the same solution you would give for the Seifa. But Ein Ochanami, they disagree with the Rashbam and say that the Seifa is not a case where you got the whole amount together. And the reason they say that is because of the qualification earlier in the Tosefta. The qualification earlier in the Tosefta is, Bamed Dvarim Amorim B'Shuta Rabim U'Bachatzer She'enu Shel Shneihem. And it should have then said, if you were right, that it was in a case where everything went together, it should have also included Bershut Lokeach. The fact that it doesn't include Bershut Lokeach over there shows you that it's not a case where the whole amount was sold in one shot, but rather it was being measured out. And despite that fact, you acquire it only once it's filled and not piece by piece. And so you could have asked from the Seifa. Gemara chose to ask from the Reisha just because that's the first thing in the Tosefta. Once you answer the Reisha, you also answer the Seifa. So you have a fundamental machlok between the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot as to whether the Seifa is really a problem for Rav and Shmuel, or whether the Seifa is not relevant to our case over here. Tashma, hasucher ta poel lasot imo da goren. Person hires a poel today to help him out at the time of the harvest. Hayom bidinar. He pays him at a dinar per day. That is the going wage today. If he waits until the goren and he hires him to work in the goren, then he would have to pay him 4 dinar. You have to pay him a sella. So now what he's doing is he's saying, look, I'll pay you up front for your work later on. I'm paying you 6 months in advance, but I'm going to pay you for a dinar per day of work. So say he's going to work from 30 days in the goren. I'm going to give you 30 dinar right now as a dinar per day. and I'm paying you up front. So now buying your services and you'll show up at the time of the Goren and you'll work for maybe 30 days. If he waited until the Goren and he had him work at the Goren, he'd be paying 4 dinar per day at that point. So in essence, what you have here is, he's saying 6 months in advance, I'm going to pay you 30 dinar for 30 days of work. If he waited till the Goren, yafes sela. If he waited till the Goren, he'd have to pay a sela per day, 4 dinar per day. So if he actually paid him on the time that he works, he'd be paying 4 dinar per day. Instead, he pays him off 6 months in advance, and he pays him a quarter of the price. Asur. La notu imenu. You can't get enough from this, you can't use this, because it is ribit. In essence, what he's doing is he's lending him money up front, because he has no reason to pay him right now, because the worker hasn't done anything for him. He doesn't owe him any money. He's giving him money. So in essence, what he did was he lent him money, and the payback is basically the in-kind work that he does at the Goren. The in-kind work that he does in the Goren is worth a sela, which is much more than the dinar that he's paying him up front. Or in essence, he's paying him back much more than he lent him in money, and that's deemed to be interest. Aval, im scharo me'ayom, if he hired him today, bedinar liyom, for dinar, u le goren yafes sela, but when he gets to the Goren, it would be worth a sela, mutar. He says, look, I want you to start working for me today, all the way through the Goren, and I'm going to pay you a dinar per day. And he pays him upfront for that. From now until the Goren is 180 days, 6 months off, I'm going to pay you 180 dinar right now, and I'm buying your services from now until the Goren. That is mutar. Mar says, v'isa gadatcho, if a Shmuel statement, when Rabbi Shmuel's statement before was correct, kor b'shloshim isa abesela ani mocher lecha, rishon kana. If you tell me that when I say kor b'shloshim sa'ah b'sela, when you break down the price and say that a kor is 30 and every sa'ah is worth a sela, then rishon kana, you're kone as you go through the measurements. Hachanami, also here, kama mitzach pasach, and as you go through the payment of this individual, each day is a separate day. Vasor le'anot mimenu. So then you shouldn't be able to get any anah from it. It should be a problem of ribit. Midina leyom, ulegoren yafesela, mutar. Yet, you said over here, that when he says it's a dinar for a day, and in the Goren it's yafesela, it's mutar, am I? Vagar notar lihu. Isn't it actually interest? So over here again, what they're suggesting is that if you would talk about the totality of work, and say you're gonna work for me for 180 days for 180 dinar, that would have been fine. Because you define the work by the totality of the work, and you're saying, if you work the full 180 days, you get the full 180 dinar. That would have been fine because there's no agarnatar there. You're not prepaying him anything. He's not discounting his price to you. You're simply going to pay him for the whole block of work. But since you define it as dinar per yom, that means that as each day goes by, he's completed his work and he's done what he has needed to do for you. So now, if you prepay him in that case, you prepay him 180 dinar, so after the first day, he's owned his dinar. He's paid you back the dinar you lent him. So on and so forth. As he goes through each day, he's paying you back the dinar that you gave him up front. Then all of a sudden you hit the Goren, and now he's paying you back with a sela, because his work is worth a sela at that point. So when he's paying you back then, he's paying you back at a much higher amount. Because you say, when you define the price by the individual parts, every part is a separate transaction. That means that there are 180 separate transactions here. You've done 150 of them at a dinar. That's fine. That would have been totally fine. But when you get to the last 30 that are in the Goren, he's paying you back a much higher amount. And that should be the equivalent of interest based on what Rav and Shmuel say. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Amarava, betizgura, zilzule bischirut miasir. Since when is there a problem in discounting your wage? There's a difference between charging interest and discounted wages. So then the Gemara says, if you're right, Rava, then Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa of the Braita that we just brought about the Socher? In one case you said it was illegal, and the other case you said it's not illegal. According to Rava, there's never interest when you're hiring a worker. Workers will fluctuate their wages because they need work. A guy who has no work, he will reduce his wages to whatever price it takes to get hired because he needs money. That means that pricing for workers is never a fixed amount. There is no market price. Even though you can go out to the market and that is the going rate, you can always find someone who's out of work who would do it for less. And just because he's willing to do it for less, that doesn't mean it's interest. when he works for less. That's what he is willing to hire himself out with. That's what he's willing to take as compensation. So if that's the case, it shouldn't matter whether you hire him today and he shows up at the Goren for 30 dinar for 30 days, or if you hire him starting today, 180 dinar to get all the way through the Goren and you start paying him today either. Either of those cases should be totally fine because his wages are exactly what he determines. That's what the Rishbam says. The Rishbam says, the Maisei Yadayim of an individual, he can set the price for them. There's no fixed price for Maisei Yadayim. Every person has an individual need, situation, circumstance, and the price is determined by his need. He needs work now, and he needs the money now. So he's discounting his wages. That's his entitlement. He can do that. That's not called interest. Once you do that, what's the difference between the cases in the break that we quoted before? My answer is, Reisha, the local Vibadei, Mehashto, in the Reisha, where he's not starting to work for him immediately, Michzeik Agarnatarli. It's Mechzeik Rebit. It's not real Rebit, because wages or discounted wages are not considered to be Rebit. But it looks like interest, because you're giving him money now, he's doing nothing, he shows up in 6 months and works for you for 30 days, that looks like he's paying you back more than you gave him. So it's Mechzeik Rebit, that's illegal. On the other hand, in the Seifa, to call him by day Mehashto, that he starts working for him immediately, Lo Mechzeik Yaga Notarli. It does not look like a interest-bearing situation when you're lending him money, because he starts to work today. It looks like you prepaid him for the work starting now, and he's working straight through for you. So there, it doesn't look like a loan, it looks like wages, it looks like you are hiring him and paying him his wages, and therefore it's not Mechzeik Rebit. So in the end, in either case, it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan that we're talking about, or a possible Issur D'Rabbanan when you discount wages. So then, when you discount wages, there's never a problem of Rebit D'Oraita. The only question is Mechzeik Rebit or not Mechzeik Rebit? So in the case where it's Mechzeik Rebit, we say Asur Mi D'Rabbanan. Case where it's not Mechzeik Rebit, we say it's totally fine. But then it's not a question on Rav and Shmuel because it has nothing to do with breaking it down into its individual component parts because that's not relevant to the case at all. He said back in the Mishnah, if it's attached to the ground and you detached any amount of it, you're kuneh. Mishum detalash koshu kana? Just because you pick something off the ground, that is considered to be a kinyan. Go and improve the property a little bit. As long as you do any amount, and then you acquire everything that's on him. So the mocher sells it to him and says, look, I got to remove this produce from my field. I got to pick it off the field, clear it out in order to be plowed or in order to use the field now. If you go ahead and pick one piece out, I'll deem that to be a kinyan for everything else that is there. So in this case, you're doing something that improves the property. You're making a kinyan in the manner by improving the property. And through that, you acquire the remainder of the items. And that's what the Rishbam notes over here, which is, Ba'atol matnita le'yashminan, our mission is coming to teach us, the cheskat karka mehane the pishtan, that taking possession of the property helps for pishtan. Avagav de lo zavin le'ara, even though you didn't give him the land. He didn't sell him the land. He didn't give him the land at all. He says, well, improve the land, and you'll acquire the pishtan. And that's what the Mishnah is telling us, that a chazaka kala, that a small chazaka of picking the pishtan, is able to acquire anything that is attached to the ground. Because if the mocher specifies that if you pick something, then you can use that karka to acquire the remainder of the item that is mechuber the karka. So even though you have no rights to the property, and you're not gaining any rights, you're not buying the property, still, if the mocher permits you to, you can use the karka as the vehicle for your kinyan. And you do that by saying to, he says to you, do some improvement or small thing on the land, and through that vehicle, you will acquire everything that is there. On the other hand, the way that the Tosafot expresses it, you can see the top Tosafot says, Klomar, hakzeik bekarka yedei yipui. Take possession of the property through the improvement. Kein nanal gadara koshu. It'll be lent to you. It'll be lent to you to make it into a kinyan chatzer that you can acquire everything that's on it. So the Balei Tosafot suggests that you actually do get a kinyan on the karka here. You're trying to acquire the karka, not because he's giving you the karka, not because you're buying the karka, but simply he's lending you the karka to facilitate the kinyan. How do you acquire that karka to facilitate the kinyan? You do some improvement on the property, that gives you the right to the karka. That's how it works. The Rishbam seems to skip that step and not require that you actually acquire the property. He's saying that because it's attached to the ground, and you do some improvement to the ground, that allows you to make a kinyan on everything that's attached to the ground, if he specifically permits you to do so. Tosfot says, no, he's giving you the rights to the property, and that's how it's working over here.
Well, others suggest that it's the compensation or the schirut that he gets for doing the work that entitles him to make a kinyan on the remainder of the items that are mechubar to the karka. And you can see something along those lines in the Rabbeinu Gershom here.
Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Pei Zayin, Amud Aleph.